Hello, hello. If you're going to PAX East this weekend, that's March 21st through 24th, 2024 in Boston, I will be doing a PAX panel on Sunday, March 24th. It's called Between Two Screens, a Nintendo DS retrospective, where myself and five fine folks are going to be going through the history of the Nintendo DS, our favorite memories, and then with audience participation, creating a list of the essential Nintendo DS games. If you're going to be there, we'll be in the Albatross Theater on Sunday, March 24th at 12:30 p.m. If not, if you're going to be around a computer screen at that time, you can watch live at twitch.tv/pax2. That's twitch.tv/pax2. We'd love to have you check that out. That's what's going on in Backlog Land this week. I would also like to say thank you to the wonderful patrons that support the show and make all this possible. They are Chris Nelson, the Top 3 Podcast Crew, Zulgeek, Chris Copleen, Eric Guess, Rick Firestone, Nick Ficori, Jill, Jeff, formerly Jerf, Kieran, Soccer, ZNA, Cupcake, Kyle, Christian S., Matt, a.k.a. Stormageddon, JD, Doug Leaf, Jason Emery, Brian Skirsha, Randall, Jake Martin, Jenny E., and many more. Those fine folks have gone to patreon.com/realDaveJackson to throw a few bucks a month my way, help support the show, and they get to vote in polls for what games I do on the show, like today's game, Titanfall 2, won one of those polls. So your support is always appreciated, and with all that being said, it's time for Titanfall. Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Jackson, and you're listening to Tales from the Backlog. This is a video games review podcast where each week I'm joined by a guest to bring a game out of the backlog, play it, and discuss. My guests today are friends of the show, both hosts of Halftone Takes podcast, Pilot and Titan Combo, Adam Bucheri and Corey Revis. Guys, welcome.
Hello. So good to be back.
Hello, hello, hello.
Adam, it's good to have you back. This is your fourth time on the show, and Corey's first time. Lovely to have you guys here.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad to have Corey here, because Corey is significantly more qualified to talk about this game than I am.
Yes, I am here. Please be gentle. This is my first time.
Yeah, this is good. Past listeners of the show will recognize Adam from Shadow of the Colossus was the first one. Then we did the Resident Evil 4 remake along with good friend Jala. And we also did the How Everyone Got Into Horror Games roundtable discussion with Jerry and Dogface Gamer. Yeah, and that Adam, you were the fourth. I was like, there were four people on that show. Who's the other person? Oh, it was me. I was the fourth person on that show. Okay.
Absolutely.
And yeah, Corey's first time on the show, and Corey's going to be our first-person shooter expert today because we're talking about Titanfall 2. Which is a first-person shooter developed by Respawn Entertainment and published by EA for PS4, Xbox One, and PC in 2016. I want to give a quick shout-out before we dig into this today. Titanfall 2 was the winner of one of the monthly Patreon polls, and this is kind of a special one. I introduced a new perk for people at the Tube Producer tier, where they can submit games for those monthly polls. Every few months, they can do that. And this was submitted by Chris, quote, spooky gym shorts and a 4XL t-shirt stiffy, end quote, Nelson. So thank you, Chris, quote, spooky gym shorts and a 4XL t-shirt stiffy, end quote, Nelson. Great pick. Great pick, Chris.
I just want to say that for once I did not sabotage your poll. Historically, I like to sabotage your polls, and I did it this
time. The polls are just a breeding ground for chaos and sabotage and
I was going to say, you sabotaged the polls before?
Yeah, you can manipulate your vote, and so if you're like really trying to, I always try to even them up because I like to do the Smash Brothers tiebreakers.
Right, that's what people like, yeah. So, For once, no sabotage, and we ended up with Titanfall 2.
Yeah, this was a clean victory.
And if this is your first time listening to the podcast, the way we're going to handle spoilers in this episode is the same way we usually do. Most of the episode will be non-spoiler. Most of it will be focused on the campaign. We'll talk about multiplayer a little bit, but spoilers, me and Adam do not play multiplayer games. So we're going to get Corey's thoughts on multiplayer, and then we'll have a hard spoiler wall. After that, full spoiler time, again, talking about the campaign, but like, this is not a game with a story that can be spoiled, really. Like, I don't even really know what's going on in the story. It's just kind of like moving you from place to place with caricature villains every now and then. But what we are going to talk about is some of the levels, because one of the reasons I was interested in replaying this game is that this game has some really just cool, creative levels that people should experience. And that goes into my elevator pitch for Titanfall 2, which is FPS meets A-plus movement and level design. What would you guys say?
My elevator pitch is sublime locomotion and exquisite level design await you in the thrilling adventures of Hand with Gun and his robot dad.
Hand with several guns.
He does have a couple guns.
Corey, what's your elevator pitch for Titanfall 2?
My elevator pitch is campaign is very short, very sweet, and straight to the point of greatness. And the multiplayer is one of the best in the industry, even after 8 years. So, yeah.
Yeah. Short and sweet campaign for sure. This took me just over 5 hours to play through the entire campaign. I played it on PC Game Pass this time. They have a deal with EA, so I was able to play it on PC Game Pass. I played it the first time on PS4, given away on PS Plus, I think. So if you're one of those people that just adds the PS Plus games every month and then forgets about them, you probably have Titanfall 2. And then, again, no multiplayer for me, just played the campaign 2 times. How about you guys?
I just want to just like give a quick shout out to downloading free games on PS Plus and then never ever playing them, because I don't know if I've ever played a free game I got from it. I forget 100% of the time.
You're not the only one. You're not the only one.
I played it on PC just this week.
Okay. Yeah. Short enough that you can play it in less than a week for sure.
Oh yeah, this was like a good like two healthy play sessions for me.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I am going to be this is going to happen probably several times throughout this, but I am the outlier. I've had this game for a very long time, probably since it came out. I did buy it like probably the week it came out. But I also had Titanfall 1, so I was really looking forward to this game. Then I did not have it because I lost it because it was a disc. And then I saw, but I still had all my information. So I rebought it a while ago. And then it was, I got a PS5, and then I didn't have it. But then I had it again because of the, like the PlayStation Plus thing. So I just re-downloaded it again, and all those memories came back to me, and I was like, oh yeah. So
nice.
I ended up playing it for a while, and I've played this campaign probably close to 8 times all the way through.
Oh, nice.
And it takes me like about 4 hours, which is basic. This is the basic amount of time. So
This is the like how I feel about the Resident Evil 3 remake, which some people complain about being too short. But for me, it's like, nah, man, I'll just sit down and like beat it in 3.5 hours and have like a complete gaming experience and feel great about it.
Yeah, I can see this campaign at least becoming one of those like, I don't really feel like playing any of these real long games I got going on. Like, I'll just sit down and play Titanfall 2 straight through on like a Sunday or something like that. I can see that happening for sure. So we'll get into our personal histories with this. And Corey, you started into yours, so we'll kick right back to you. You said you had Titanfall 1, so you were about Titanfall 2 when it was coming out. You were looking forward to it.
Yes. A lot of the things that were in Titanfall 1 that was like iconic, like the movement, which is probably the most iconic thing, but also just the gunplay and stuff. Because I did play the multiplayer, but the multiplayer in Titanfall 1 was extremely janky, and it had a way different system about it, where everybody had a single chassis, like a single Titan, and you just customized it that way. But it made it like super weird and unbalanced and everything like that. It was not fun to play the multiplayer that much. However, it was fun because the Titans made it fun. But the outside of the Titans was kind of a little bit weird and not as like fun, not as movement based and everything like that. And it didn't have a campaign. What a lot of people like to say is it had a campaign, quote unquote, throughout the multiplayer. So as you played multiplayer, you had these middle cutscenes that basically explained what you were doing in each map, which felt really lame. And I was like, eh. And apparently I was not alone. A lot of people felt that way. They're like, where's a real campaign? Why can't you just make something short and sweet? We love this world. Because that's what basically the campaign in Titanfall 2 is. It is a very specific story that's a part of this world. It's not anything groundbreaking. It's just about one singular character that's happening in this, like, just mishmash of a whole bunch of stuff that's happening in the larger world. So, but I dig the world. And I always did. I love sci-fi, almost like rebel military kind of stories and stuff like that. So I always like dug that. So I was really looking forward to Titanfall 2.
Nice. Adam, how about you? I think you're on the total opposite end of that spectrum, right?
I am. I actually, here's a short anecdote. Previous to playing Titanfall 2 this week, my previous experience with the game, with the franchise, was that the last midnight launch for a video game that I went to, like to a store in person to buy a physical game, like a Barbarian in the Dark Ages, that was to pick up Dark Souls 2. And so I went to the midnight launch of Dark Souls 2, and that was also the same day that Titanfall launched. So there was a separate midnight launch for Titanfall, and I was like the only Dark Souls guy and a bunch of Titanfall guys. And they were just like, bro, you excited about Titanfall? And I'm just like, I'm here for Dark Souls. And they're like, that's cool, man. And I was just like, yeah, your thing seems cool too.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
That's actually really funny.
They were nice guys. Good representation of the fan base. Yeah. But yeah, I played this for the first time for the show. I knew it had a great reputation. I've listened to people talk about it before. I, similar to Dave, I am similarly repelled by competitive multiplayer. I think it is a gene that I simply do not have. I have no real appetite for that kind of thing. This isn't the kind of game that I usually gravitate towards. Like, I do like first-person shooters. It's just that, like, it doesn't occur to me to play them that often. It's not what I go to first. But playing this reinforced that I really do like this flavor of, like, movement shooter. And I really got to get around to playing Ultra Kill one of these days.
Yeah, kind of similar to you, like, I don't play multiplayer. So like when Titanfall 1 came out, I heard about it, but I was just kind of like, well, I hope other people have fun with that. I'm not going anywhere near that because it's a multiplayer only game. So none of my business, basically. So I also like first person shooters, but I just don't play that many of them. And we were talking a little bit before the show, like a lot of the games that I like happen to be in first person and they have guns in them. But they're all immersive sims, basically, like Prey and Deathloop and Redfall and Deus Ex and stuff like that. And like the shooting is good, but you can play those games and not shoot anybody, you know, varying degrees of good. I also did Half-Life 2 on the podcast. That's another first-person shooter. That's a good game.
Yeah.
I played this for the first time in probably like 2018 or 2019, and it was purely because I got it on PS Plus. And everyone on like Reddit or wherever I was hanging out at the time was freaking out. Like this game's really good. If you haven't played this, give it a try. It's really short. And I was like, say no more. It's free and it's short and it's good. Okay, I will try it. And to get into our kind of quick opening thoughts before we dive in, all of those things, free, good, and short, are true. This game seems like it has like universal praise out there as far as the campaign goes. And then if you're into multiplayer, like people seem to like that too. And, you know, I think that this is one of those things that lives up to the praise. Like the campaign is really, really fun. The level design is fantastic, like surprisingly fantastic. You would think,
yeah,
okay, they're going to put a campaign in because they want to give people something to do while they learn how to play, and then they go play the multiplayer. Like they could phone in the level design, but they did not phone in the level design here. So it's just a really awesome, really fun game. And, you know, sometimes things live up to the hype, and it's really cool when that happens.
Yeah, this game is 100% my favorite FPS of all time.
Wow.
I have played a lot of these types of games. Like I grew up on like Halo and, you know, Call of Duty, like the early Call of Duties and Battlefield and stuff like that. And I love Battlefield and everything like that. But when this game came out, even Titanfall 1 was so much fun and so much of a breath of fresh air. It felt a little bit like Quake, if you guys remember that back in the day.
Interesting touch point.
Yeah. But so just how you can run around and just do stuff. And so I was like, wow, this is just more refined. And then Titanfall 2 came out and I was like, yes, this is exactly what I wanted. It's, and you can be quote unquote sweaty in the multiplayer, but everybody's more or less chill. Like you can be good at this game, but the point is not to be good. The point is to be fun. So yeah, I would put this game as top tier in the genre of especially like milsim type first person shooters, where a lot of people do have that Call of Duty. Ugh, I don't want any of that. But
yeah,
yeah, this is by like some of the devs from Call of Duty, from like Infinity Ward and stuff like that. But
yeah. Famously, there is like kind of a schism, and then they broke off to make this far more imaginative game than the Call of Duty minds that they had been slaving away in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Like Respawn is just like that, and I appreciate them. So it's not a perfect game by far. It's not a perfect game, but this game exists in my head rent free. So, and I will allow it to do so.
My opening thoughts are that through in the spoiler section of this, especially when we're talking about the narrative, you are going to hear me clown on this game a little bit.
That is
something that I am doing while being hugely affectionate for this. I think that this is really fun and really good, and everyone should definitely go play it, despite the fact that, like, if you care about narrative and story, like, this is a screwball comedy weird thing that they have created. I like this game a whole lot as far as that single player campaign goes. You know, I'm not going to play the multiplayer, but yeah, this is definitely memorable, and I can definitely see myself replaying it as a palate cleanser game of just like, I just came off of Baldur's Gate 3 and I need to do something that's not Baldur's Gate 3 right now. You know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. This is good, dumb fun, especially in the campaign. So we are going to take a little music break. And when we come back, we're going to set up what the story is in that campaign. In Titanfall 2, you play as Rifleman Jack Cooper. The name alone should give you an idea of what kind of character Jack Cooper is. I am going to take a couple of terms from friends of the show to describe Jack Cooper, okay? poster child for, as Watch Out for Fireballs describes them, Guy Whitey Shoot Good characters.
Correct.
Or alternatively, as friend of the show Andre from Fine Time calls them, the impossible white man, which is basically a character who is a white soldier or guy, doesn't even have to be a soldier, no distinguishing characteristics other than he's very good at shooting stuff, basically.
He came default.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They you got a character creation, and then the person was just like, nah, that's good.
Yeah.
Choose your backstory. I'd rather not.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole impossible white man trope is something that, yeah, I hear quite a bit in video games. It's just starting to change. Mm-hmm. And as the, I guess, resident black man, I am definitely like, I don't, I always kind of roll my eyes at this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it all depends on how fun the character is too. Like, everybody seems to be in on the joke because I always find it really, I always find it really funny that these people are just trainees and somehow they're really good at shooting. Because you're really good at shooting, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, part of the thing with Cooper is that Cooper's just a regular soldier at the beginning of the game. He hopes to one day become a pilot. That's a capital P. That's a proper noun, a pilot. Mm. Pilots partner with Titans. Titans are the mechs in Titanfall. They're AI, they're sentient, like they talk, they're partners basically. On their own, the pilots are like super soldiers. They're like parkouring around doing superhuman shit. They're the ultimate soldier. And then they can also get inside the Titans and control them in battle. And kind of on that point that Corey just brought up there, Cooper has like a bunch of self-doubts. He wants to be a pilot, but he doesn't know if he's actually good enough to be a pilot.
Spoiler, he's the greatest pilot of all time, and he deserves treats for being such a very good boy.
So, on the opening mission, Cooper's commanding officer and mentor gets killed, and that guy has a Titan. The Titan's name is BT-7274. We'll just call him BT for the rest of the episode, as they do in the game. And BT, because Cooper is the only person there, gets transferred to him. And so I think this is probably people's most favorite part about the campaign is like the dynamic between Cooper and BT. Like BT's got the friendly robot thing going on. The reason why people like droids in Star Wars or Transformers and stuff like that. It's very similar here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very much a boy and his bot feel for like basically the entire campaign. And I always like that. I find that very cute. And it is very cute. So.
Yeah. People talk about BT as if he is your robot son. However, he is your robot dad and is clearly the adult in the room between the two of you.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Your character will be like, I don't know, man. I'm not sure I can do this. And then your robot dad will be like, you can definitely do this. I believe in you. Activating the Apple Slices protocol.
Yeah.
And also what's really funny, just to add to that, they do always address BT before they address you, which is really funny.
There are constantly military personnel negotiating with your robots while you are in like the timeout corner.
It's like it's like that don't talk to me or my son ever again.
Ever again.
It's absolutely that top to bottom.
I never even thought about that, and that's really funny.
This is like the setup for the game. Like sometimes you get in trouble and you save BT, sometimes BT gets in trouble and you save him. Sometimes you team up to just kick the shit out of everybody in your way. The story itself is like there's a militia, there's a struggle between two factions going on. Like there's people that are clearly evil and they're trying to get like a weapon of mass destruction. Basically, that's what the story turns into.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the last time I mention anything about the plot of this game, unless it's something that directly happens to you, Cooper, or to BT. That's basically all that's going on here.
Yeah. IMC, I believe, bad, which is the Empire. and you are part of the Rebels. So yep, that's basically all you kind of need to know.
Yep. Check.
Also, just this is a sci-fi story with all human characters. There are aliens, but they are exclusively weird dogs. There's no true. Like, yeah. You know, there's no Mass Effect like different species trying to cooperate.
That's true. Yeah, there are some alien species you fight against, but they're all animals for sure.
Yeah,
like they're not intelligent. So, that's really all I have to say about this story. This campaign is more about, I feel like, more about teaching you how to play the game and then getting you ready for, you know, spending your life playing the multiplayer, getting sweaty, if you want to get sweaty. Apparently, yeah, you don't
you don't have to get sweaty. That's one big thing about this game and Titanfall 2 in general. It's always been about, we're not Call of Duty. We are not Call of Duty. Everybody, we just want to shout, we're not Call of Duty. You can actually have fun here.
It's also worth noting again that this campaign is really short. And I think that there are like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then like an intro mission. So maybe 8 missions in 4 to 5 hours. It moves by pretty quickly. If you are not feeling a certain level, it will be over soon. But spoiler, we'll talk about these. There are very few levels that I wasn't feeling. But it is kind of like a go to this place, do some interesting gameplay, which we'll get into. Meet this caricature of a villain, and then they're gone and you move on to the next place. It moves by pretty snappy. It's easy to like pick a spot to quit, or it's easy to just go straight through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yes. The pacing of this campaign moves at breakneck speed on purpose. And I think that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. I believe basically one big intro into how it's teaching you how to play the multiplayer.
Yeah.
And not even play it well, just be able to press button, do thing. But it is 100% fun, in my opinion, due to the gameplay and level design and the set pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to go into the set pieces in like a while, but yeah.
Yeah. That's part of it too. Like your breakdown, like on the topic of pacing, your breakdown of like story to gameplay is way on the side of gameplay here. Like,
yeah,
I don't know that there's a cutscene longer than like 3 minutes in this game. Like you might be watching something happen for a couple minutes, but then you're right back into gameplay. So that should kind of show you like what the point of the campaign is, as we've talked about before.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Also think it's worth noting that like this campaign is short and it's for a multiplayer game, which often they're accused like this kind of game is accused of just being a training ground for a multiplayer, right? Mm-hmm. Just introducing you to the mechanics. And that's true, and that does happen here, but this is a game that's full of ideas, and these levels are full of purpose and intention. None of these feel like they are just recycled battle maps or you know, multiplayer stuff that has been converted or hastily smashed together. These are big, ambitious, cool, intentional levels that are all really well designed and considered.
Yeah, absolutely. Like these are designed as playgrounds, basically. Like this is not a game where the places you go are designed for realism in any way. They're designed to facilitate your movement, basically. And that's kind of the point of this gameplay. Like I think the guns feel really good. to shoot. And I think that I didn't know there was Call of Duty pedigree, but like you can shit all you want on Call of Duty, but like the gameplay feels good. It feels good to play those mm-hmm. games. I grew yeah, up definitely. Playing those too. And I think that DNA is here too. I really like how it feels to use the guns in here. They feel really impactful, which mm-hmm. it's a big like pet peeve of mine to play shooters in general that have like bullet spongy enemies where maybe they got you on some kind of loot grind or some kind of level grind or whatever. And they got to have bullet spongy enemies to basically make sure you never feel powerful. That's why I am not really interested in playing highly acclaimed things like Destiny or The Division or something like that, because I've heard that about both of those games. Not here. Like, enemy soldiers go down in a couple of hits. Bosses are not like these tanky things that are going to take you 10 minutes to kill or, you know, longer than that. I think that this game is setting up like a real power fantasy, both when you're on foot and in the Titans. Yep. And I think this is like step one. Like, nothing you fight is actually that tanky. You feel good playing it.
Yes, I 100% agree. I think the one hit melee kill is also extremely well placed.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, this guy is so good at punching robots to death.
Yeah.
I forget what is the melee kill? Is it like a gun bash or is it just a punch?
It's just a punch. It's just a punch.
Hell yeah. It's just a regular human unarmed fist.
If you jump or, you know, in the case of the multiplayer grapple, you can just kick people to death. Like one hit, one kick to like the dome or like the stomach and they're out. They're gone. Mm-hmm. You disintegrate.
I do want to give a special shout out to the shotguns in this game. This game has some good shotguns. Man, I picked up that one auto shotgun and then just basically carried it the whole game. And then there's the second shotgun. I think it's called the Mastiff, which shoots a horizontal spread, like a perfectly flat horizontal line, almost like a Dead Space gun. Uh-huh. That one also rules.
Yeah.
Quality shotguns in this game.
A famous one is the Kraber. If you know, you know.
I don't know shit.
Yeah. I don't know them by name, but I was just running through in my head. I was like, I didn't really fuck with sniper rifles too much in this game.
Because no.
Like, you don't want to stand still and shoot. You want to be running and, you know, wall running and shit like that. But everything else that I picked up feels great. Even like the pistols. The pistols are powerful. They're fun. And it all plays into that, like the movement, basically. It's facilitating you like moving around and shooting at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite like Deathloop levels of like wacky guns, but like these are silly sci-fi weapons that don't make sense. Like the aforementioned horizontal line shotgun.
Yeah.
Or there's a sniper rifle with twin barrels that shoots two bullets side by side.
Yep.
Why? It's called like the double take or something. It's very funny to me.
I know what you're talking about, but I forget.
In case you have two targets that are hugging each other or something like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Imagine somebody doing that while like wall running and jumping in the air. It is the epitome of 360 no scope.
Yeah, absolutely.
That happens all the time.
Yeah. Wall run 360 no scope, 70 feet in the air at moving at 112 kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
Bravo. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wizards. I tell you, wizards.
Going back to just the broad overview of the gameplay, you talked about like low time to kill for most enemies. Enemies are not bullet spongy. Conversely, that means that I feel like the boss fights were pretty underwhelming. Fighting a boss Titan never meaningfully felt different than fighting a regular Titan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the thing with those is like some of the bosses have special moves and they're like, I definitely felt like the bosses were more dangerous. Like they did more damage to me for sure, but they don't have a lot more health than a regular Titan. And like, there isn't that much diversity in what their moves ultimately are versus a regular Titan. Anyway, it's like there's only so many things that they can do. Like, oh, this one has a sword, so they're going to run at you with a sword or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's other melee titans too. Or this one has like a barrage of rockets, but like I have a barrage of rockets. Like it's,
yeah.
The bosses are not super memorable in that way, but I would prefer them like this than, you know, these are like half hour drawn out fucking like armored core fights or something like that.
Yeah. I'm not asking for Baltaeus in this, in this game. And also it's worth noting that I did play the game on normal difficulty. So maybe I would simply appreciate it at a slightly higher difficulty.
Perhaps. Corey, have you tried that? Have you played this on a higher difficulty?
Yes. I have not played it on the highest difficulty because it is kind of that one hit kill type thing. It's like, don't get hit, idiot. And I'm like, yeah, okay. but I want to say, in regards to the bosses, the boss battles, because they are the weakest part of the campaign, but only for really one specific reason to me. It is because they're AI controlled. They would be a lot more strategic and fun. It like Adam mentioned earlier, you don't want like Baltaeus levels of, okay, it's been 30 minutes and you know, I'm still fighting this one Titan, but it is a little bit more engaging. Cause I hate to keep going back to like the multiplayer, but in the multiplayer, when you are facing another Titan, it's another person and they have the same type of movement movement that you do. They have like the dashes and everything because it is way more terrifying, for the Titan with the sword coming at you and it's like barreling towards you and that sword can like tear you apart if it's constantly hitting you. Then, you know, the AI who's staying back with the sword and you're like, why are you doing this? I could just snipe you. Every time you like teleport around or something like that. And I think it's just kind of, in my opinion, a showcase of the Titans with one particular exception. And I guess we'll get to that later. But for the most part, I've never like you both are absolutely right. It's like it doesn't take that much effort to take down a Titan, especially when you fight it just long enough that it starts repeating its moveset, basically. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you are constantly bombarded with health.
Yeah.
It feels like everything is so much like weaker than you by default. So, you know, it is one of those things where it's, you don't really have to think about outplaying the boss. You just have to kind of wear it down.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned, like, the AI kind of reminded me why they're a little bit easier, too, is because you're often fighting them in places with lots of cover, and the AI is just, like, it's not great on the bosses, so you can just kind of, like, hang out on the other side of cover, and they, like, they might slowly mosey around to try and find you. They might not. They might just chill on the other side, so you can kind of peek out and shoot and then pop back into cover, which I don't really feel like is the intention with the Titan combat, but it's kind of how it can go. I think I played on the normal difficulty as well, and there were some bosses that like would really fuck me up if I was just out in the open. So I did kind of resort to that kind of like guerrilla tactics every now and then.
Yeah.
I will also say for a game that trains you to do like multiplayer and all this stuff, it's weird that they never force you to do a rodeo, which Dave might not even know what that is because the game doesn't teach you it, but you can run up. If you jump, if you are in pilot mode, if you're outside of your Titan and you jump up and land on the back of an enemy Titan, you can yank out one of their batteries and deal like a third of their health.
Oh, sick.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, but you can rodeo them again, throw a grenade down where the battery is and completely waste them. It's like a one-hit kill.
Interesting. Yeah, they don't teach you that. And from my memory, there's only one time when you're forced to fight a Titan while you're on foot. Otherwise, you'd have to like make the decision to get out of your Titan and go do it.
You know?
We've talked about the movement quite a bit. So let's focus on that. And then we'll talk about fighting in the Titans. So when you're on foot, This game has a big focus on movement, this parkour type, like wall running and sliding and hopping over ledges and stuff like that. You have a double jump in this game. Like, again, we're not really going for realism here. Your person can double jump. You're incentivized to be moving around and wall running and all of that stuff all the time. It's one of those games where, like, if you're just out in the open running, you can get tore up pretty quickly by enemy fire. But if you're wall running, accuracy for the enemies goes way down. So they want you to always be moving. And they do a good job of teaching you this and kind of escalating to a point where, like, certain levels later in the game, like, there's no ground. Like, you're wall running across bottomless pits basically all the time.
Yeah.
And it feels great. Like, this is a great flow state game. On top of, like, having really fun and satisfying gunplay, the movement, wall running, double jumping, this is a great game to, like, run into a group of people and slide and shoot while you're sliding. Like, it's really satisfying. I think this is great. Like, they did such an awesome job of just making this feel really good to play.
Yes. Mm-hmm. To me, to add to that, you're incentivized to use, to not just keep one gun with you, even though it's really fun to do that. Like you just meant, Adam mentioned, like, just having that shotgun, bam, bam, just all the time. Cause it's fun and it feels good. Cause it's very impactful.
Great shotgun.
But you're incentivized to just use anything you pick up and just as you're moving, as you're sliding, as you're jumping, as you're like wall running and everything like that. And then use it, drop it, pick up something else, you know, strafe around like an enemy. You could literally run circles around groups of enemies and just kill them off and not even break a sweat type thing. And they want you to continuously do that.
Yeah. I just want to just talk about like some of the specifics of the movement real quick.
Yeah.
So like when we talk about like you're incentivized to run, like do wall running and all this stuff, what we mean by that is like not only does enemy accuracy go down when you're wall running is so effortless and so it's a better way to move. Period. You are faster. Mm-hmm. You are able to get crazy height. There's at one point where you're like in an enormous elevator shaft and you're just like, I can just hop between these walls forever. I could scale an infinite mountain as long as there are two walls in close proximity to each other. It is really empowering just how much speed and movement and height and distance that you can get when you really get up to speed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a gameplay mechanic it's very slight, but a gameplay mechanic about the wall running is you are always ascending whenever you start wall running. You never just immediately start going down or something. It always pushes you up because technically from a visual like world building perspective, you have rockets on your back. So they push you up. So you always have an arc whenever you wall run, and that means you can ascend things a lot quicker if you're running in between walls and stuff like that. And you always pick up speed. So
yeah, as far as like what kind of parkour you're doing, it's less Mirror's Edge and it's more like Tribes.
Yes, that is a good. That's a good reference.
Yeah, like you can pick up some wild momentum.
Mm-hmm. And the levels, again, are designed with this in mind, like first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be going through a bunch of like interior spaces, like you're inside of buildings quite a bit, and they're not designed like a real building would be. They're designed like they would be designed if everyone in the building were a wall running and wall jumping professional and not just you. So even the outdoor spaces are designed like this too. And all the places where you can wall run, because you can't do it everywhere, but the places where you can are either like perfectly flat or like, let's say you're wall running on the side of a cliff or something. You'll take one look at it and be like, oh, wall running spot. Okay. I gotcha. Perfect.
Yeah. Even so, there's few things that you can't make work if you're just like, I wonder if I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the multiplayer has a grappling hook and they didn't even give us the grappling hook. Like,
oh yeah,
I can only imagine how busted the movement gets in multiplayer.
I would say if there was the grappling hook in the campaign, 90% of the level you would never see. Yeah. Because
walls can't contain you.
Yeah. All you would need is a, you wouldn't even need a wall. You would need just a pillar, just a flat pillar. And you could just kick off of that, you know, swing, you know, the, one of the levels that we're going to get into, like where there's constantly moving platforms. You could just, you know, go all the, all you would need to do is touch that platform maybe twice. Just give yourself more momentum just to fling yourself across the map.
Okay, so the grappling hook, like, it's not like a thing where there are designated grapple points. You can just grapple on anything flat?
Yeah, you can just grapple on anything. Okay. Even other people, even other players.
Even other people! Oh, yeah!
It would be super fun if it was in the campaign, but I think it would trivialize a lot of, like, the stuff that they set up. Like, they probably tried and they were like, we want people to, like, engage with our platforming challenges and instead of just skipping everything.
Yeah.
Also note, like, this movement is not only like for combat, like there's lots of platforming in this game too, like even outside of combat, and special mechanics that are introduced in certain levels that might go away, like only for that level. And so there's a little bit of a puzzle aspect to a few of the levels that I think is like really, really well executed. And like the platforming in all the levels, I think feels good. It's really intuitive. Like there wasn't a lot of times when I would get halfway through and be like, wait, where do they want me to go? Like none of that really happened to me. And then when they introduce other kind of puzzle-esque mechanics too, those just kind of added onto the fun rather than introducing any confusion or anything.
I might describe them as like challenges, right? There are navigation challenges and there are like these unique mechanics that they'll introduce in order to create new exciting situations. But the game never asks you to stop and be like, okay, now use your brain and really think through the situation. It's always just like, go, 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 feel it out. Just jump and you'll figure it out along the way.
Yep.
Yeah. And I will back that 100% because it wants you to keep moving.
Yeah.
And if you have to stop, then you're probably going to get killed. Because enemies, the one good thing that I like about this game in terms of like enemy design is they'll gang up on you if you stop for too long. So you got to keep moving. And usually when you keep moving and you get a better sense of, oh, I know where I'm going. I know what to do next. I can keep this going. There's very few times where that will stump you unless you are terrified of heights, because sometimes you jump into like Adam said before, I just got to jump and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if this wall will hold me. I don't know anything, but this game is about running and jumping. So I got to just run and jump.
Just run and jump. Two notes on the levels. The levels are extremely linear, but they do a fantastic job of making you feel like you're navigating hostile spaces and not only taking the only path forward that's available. I might even go as far as to compare it to something like Half-Life 2, which I think also achieves that feeling where it's like you're playing Ravenholm and you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe that I like found this secret path through this attic and now I'm on the rooftops and like, am I even supposed to be here? And it's like, this is the only way that you could have possibly gone. But they make it feel like it's your idea, right? They make it feel like you're navigating it, which is a compliment. I don't want that to be twisted into like that being a negative thing or me criticizing it for being linear. I think that these are really well crafted. And again, excellent signaling and excellent flow of the level design itself.
Yeah. I remember in the Half-Life 2 episode, I was talking about like the first level when you're on the rooftops and you're running away and it's like a really desperate sprint and you just take the first available door that you see and you're like, shit, well, I'll try this. And if it doesn't work out, I'm dead. But it works out every time because the developers are fucking good at this. They know what they're doing. And this game has that exact same type of feel to it because you're constantly pressured. Like Corey said, like there are like dozens of enemies in most open areas, and those bomb spider tick looking things, they will fuck you up. So like when you see them, they get you moving. Like you have to run away, jump up on a wall and get moving again. And, it's just, everything is designed in such a way that either when you're in combat and you're like running and jumping around, it like chains into other things that you can wall run on or jump off of, or, you know, double jump onto and stuff like that. You don't find yourself like up in midair and you're like, oh, I ran out of platforms or walls or something, and now I fall down into the group. Like I didn't have that happen, you know?
I assure you that if you jump off of this thing and there isn't a vertical wall that you can wall run up against, a vertical wall that you can wall run up against will be provided.
Yeah. There are lots of leap of faith type wall runs where you're like, well, this wall doesn't seem to go anywhere, but something will show up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also want to give a compliment for... if you are in a situation where either a new mechanic is introduced or you're looking at it and you're just like, ah, I'm not quite sure how I'm supposed to navigate this. If you slow down for a moment, your helmet will start calibrating and then it will give you the option to use a quote unquote ghost, which is a little hologram that will show you the path that you can take. So if you're in that flow state, you're never going to see them at all. You're just vibing. You're in the middle of it. But if you need a hint, slowing down will provide a hint for you in a way that to me feels good. I appreciated them, even though I only ended up using them like twice.
Yeah, for sure. The fact that, you know, it's not intrusive unless you want it to be there. It's a good addition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is absolutely the point of... basically, all of the movement and everything in this campaign is multiple ways to get everywhere and at every possible angle, and go fast.
Yeah,
keep moving, go fast. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people that are very familiar with the game, Titanfall 2, they love it. They're veterans of the game. They love to just go back into the campaign and see how fast they can go through the level. In different ways, and see if they can just, that's like a, you know, a personal challenge, with a lot of players where it's like, I know this level pretty well. Let's see if I can like move through it without getting shot like once, or without taking any damage, or without touching the ground. Like it's very fun to play this game in a, like the floor is lava type situation, which I know quite a bit of people tend to do.
As we are recording, Games Done Quick is happening right now, which I'm a big fan of, and I tune in every time it is on. I can't wait to watch some Titanfall 2 speedruns now that I'm familiar with it. But something that I'm also familiar with, there is a dedicated category just to the opening training course.
Oh, yes, nice. There is. Yes, there is.
And the world record is like 18 seconds or something absurd.
It's insane. I've seen it. And I'm like, I am not nearly even close to being that good. That's wizard shit. And I'm like,
this for sure would be a fun game to watch, like a glitchless speed run and just watch someone master the spaces for sure. So we talked about the on-foot combat a lot, and we kind of touched on the Titan combat when we talked about bosses, but in every level, there will be a section where you either you get into the Titan, or there's some levels that's just all Titan combat. So you get inside of BT, and it shifts into this much different, much slower Titan combat. So you have much less mobility when you're inside the Titan, but it's a lot more powerful. So like... you've got two different types of power fantasies in this game. You've got like the movement fantasy when you're on foot, and then you've got the Titan combat where you can like step on dudes and they splat. or you've got your chain gun and you can just take out, you know, an entire group of people in half a second.
Mm.
There are a bunch of different loadouts for the Titans, and they all have a bunch of different kinds of weapons and defensive abilities and like evasive maneuvers and stuff like that. A lot of variety. I stuck with like this, probably like the first two that you get seem to be the most fun to me. Like the one that you start with has an ability where you just catch projectiles and throw them back at the enemies,
yeah,
like with a magnet field or something.
Yep.
Infinitely cool. Satisfying. We talked a little bit about how the boss fights are like a little bit of a letdown, but like overall, I had a lot of fun playing with the Titans too.
Yeah.
I mixed it up fairly frequently. There was only one that like I really didn't gel with, which was like the sniper one. Because I don't know, I just don't like that archetype for that one. I think the one that I ended up having the most fun with is, it was later down in the unlockables list. But basically, you have a main gun, and as you hit them, it builds up like little charges on a lock-on. And then once you have a full lock-on, then you can send a missile barrage. But like there's no cooldown on the missile barrage. It's just establishing lock-on. And so you can get some cool combos with that. I had a lot of fun with that. And I also really liked the one with a shotgun and a sword.
Yeah.
Good combo. Yeah, that one, I melted a few bosses with that one for sure. if you're aggressive, you can put out a crazy amount of damage.
Yeah. I really like what you guys are saying about the Titan combat and the Titan basically levels and stuff, because that's exactly how it is. Like, you know, how I love how that's supposed to feel, because that's basically how people are in the multiplayer, where you just, like Adam, you mentioned, like, I love like the shotgun with the sword and how it's hyper aggressive. That's how, like, that's how people play, because they're archetypes in the multiplayer. They're not just BT in the multiplayer. Right. It's like each one, there's
I can take a moment, like in the multiplayer, probably at the start of a multiplayer match, you would choose one of these loadouts, which is like a different robot entirely, and then you'd have to stick with that for the multiplayer match, I assume.
Yeah, I will get into the multiplayer in like a second. But yeah, it is kind of like that, where it's not just one basic thing and you just outfit it with different things.
Mm.
It's actually a class. It's more of like picking a class, basically, and maybe an RPG. But what I like the most about Titan play, basically, is the weight. Everything is weighty.
Mm-hmm.
Your movement is weighty. You have dashes, like each, you know, Titan has a dash, but it all depends on how heavy you are. There's Ronin, which is the one with the sword, is very tiny, so it has multiple dashes on top of a teleport, so it's kind of busted. but it's meant to get in your face and just hack you down, and, you know, that's why it has a shotgun. So very far away, it can get picked apart, which it has, like, the sniper. The sniper is not really like a weapon that I would use. The sniper, like chassis, it's called North Star, but it flies. So you're really hard to hit sitting very far away.
Mm-hmm.
And that railgun, which is the sniper, is really powerful, actually, if you build it up all the way, because it has like a charge. But I think one of the best feelings is, like, just walking, lumbering around in a Titan because of the amount of weight that you have. And, you know, it has a punch and, like, you know, a melee, and even shooting your guns, you can kind of see, like, the screen and the feel of the effects of it just jolt and everything. And I'm pretty sure that was 100% intentional with, them just building that up more than they had in Titanfall 1, because they did have that in Titanfall 1, but it wasn't as impactful, in my opinion. So they just overclocked it, and now everybody's like, oh man, this is what I've been waiting for. They built the whole game up to me getting into this thing, Yes, uh-huh. It's fun to run around as a pilot because that's really cool. But they built it up to, I need to get my Titan type yeah. situation. So that doesn't disappoint.
We're going to talk about aesthetics in a moment. So I don't want to spoil too much about that. But I do want to give a special shout out to the getting into your Titan animation. First uh-huh. of all, there's like 30 of them, like the yeah. different angles that you approach them. If you approach from behind, BT will like scoop you up from between his legs, shove him in your pit. If you approach from the top, there's like another hatch that you can jump in. There's all kinds of ways that BT can grab you and stuff you into his robot mouth where you live. And, and it's cool every time. And then the panels like slide in, like, in a way that like is consistently really cool looking to me. I love mm-hmm. just the overall presentation of the transition from pilot to Titan and Titan to pilot.
Yeah, and those moments happen oftentimes, like you'll start a mission and you'll be on foot for like the first three quarters of the mission, and then you'll mm-hmm. jump in the Titan for like the end. Like there's a boss fight or there's like a gauntlet you got to get through. And like maybe the situation's hairy, and yeah, you get that animation where like you're making like a mad dash and like BT opens up the, like you said, the pit where you live and sleep and work and everything. And your guy just like dives in, the things like closes behind him, and then it's go time. You're in like that situation that maybe was hairy like 5 seconds ago, you're now in total control. And it's like a really awesome like pacing moment. We'll talk about spectacle too. And like, this is part of it too. Like the feel, these Titan fights that you get into, like the scale changes when you get in there, and it's always cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to mechanics though, real quick, I just want to talk a little bit more about the two modes of play, pilot yeah. mode versus Titan mode. Mm-hmm. Because mechanically, they're totally different. They have different health systems between the two of them. When you are on foot as the pilot, you have a very generous auto regen. So closer to a, you know, like a Call of Duty or whatever was popular at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the Titan itself, that has a combination of a Halo-style regenerating shield as well as a health bar. Mm-hmm. And this is important because of the way that it mechanically incentivizes you to interact as each of these two modes. As a pilot, you have a regenerating health. So if you get shot, the best thing that you can do is run and run fast and wall run and slide, because that gives you space and that gives you time to recover and then make an approach back. As a Titan, you are mechanically incentivized to refill your health. And the most consistent way to do that is by killing other Titans. Mm-hmm. So it's got a kind of Doom 2016 push forward combat rhythm to it. And as a result, it's an additional layer of contrast between those two primary play modes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fact that the two of them are so different, but they're both really fun to play. Like, yeah. There was never a time when I thought, ah, shit, I got to get out of the Titan now. Because playing on foot is really fun. Or, you know, you get to the end of the mission and it's like, oh, there's a boss, time to get in the Titan. Ah, shit, I don't like the Titan combat. Like, none of that. Like, both of these are great. So it's, yeah. Like, want to ask, so Corey, in multiplayer, are you in the Titan more often? Are you on foot or is it both?
Okay. In multiplayer, because I was going to lead right into this after you guys were talking, because I was starting to get a little giddy. I was like, oh boy. Because in multiplayer, the reason why I would say this is my favorite, you know, in the FPS genre, this is my mm-hmm. favorite type of multiplayer, is because it works in tandem. When you're out of your Titan as a pilot and when you're in your the Titan. So in multiplayer, you start out as a pilot. You're drop shipped in mm-hmm. with like your small team. It's not a huge team. It's like 6-on-6. Mm-hmm. And you're just running around, wall jumping, you know, sliding. Everybody's doing the same thing. But it's also you have grunts, you have AI running around the map too, robots and, you know, enemy AI. So it's about building up points. It's not about kills. It's about building up points for your team. And that, the more you points you earn, the faster you earn it. You basically charge, like a bar to get your Titan to, you know, your Titanfall is ready. That's what they would like say. And then you would press a button and you can kind of point where you want it to drop anywhere on the map. So it'll just, you will see it coming out of the sky when it's ready and it will just smash down and there'll be a shield around it that no enemy can go in except you. And, that is the whole point of, you know, each match is getting your Titanfall, and getting it fast and getting to your Titan, because that is another challenge. You have to get to it. As soon as somebody sees that you have a Titan out, they'll camp your Titan sometimes because you got to get to it. And if you don't get it to it fast enough, which is always cool, also cool, is it will auto, like it will just turn itself on. And depending on like the loadout you have, it'll either have a very smart and aggressive AI, or it'll always try to find you and just protect you. It'll run while, like, it'll try to catch up to you and basically stick by your side. So you know, you can fight in your if you like, you know, just running around as a pilot, you can run around as a pilot and your Titan can just follow you and just be backup, like a giant backup. Or you can get in your Titan. Now, what's cool about multiplayer is what I've always thought was cool is, in terms of like health, for example, like, cause those little green batteries will drop, you know, all over the place. You can get out of your Titan and go grab that battery and just have it as a backup battery whenever you get back in your Titan. It's actually faster to do that than to just chase after batteries while in your Titan. You're encouraged to constantly get out of your Titan, but then get back in when you need to. Because I've talked with people before and they're like, well, wouldn't you just want to stay in your Titan? Especially if the power fantasy is I can't destroy other Titans unless I'm in my Titan myself. I'm like, actually, that's not true. It's actually the opposite. You're more powerful as just a running around fly that's bothering other Titans because you have anti-Titan weaponry, like giant grenades and like big beam like rifles and stuff like that. You could be a menace to a Titan, especially if it doesn't know where you are and you're just popping, sliding in and out of buildings and, you know, around the map.
Yeah, that's one thing I really liked about like the very few times when you fight a Titan in the campaign when you're on foot is like you have an advantage, like you both have an advantage on each other. Like you're much faster if you're good at wall running and sliding and all of that. Like a Titan might have a really hard time hitting you, but if you do get hit, it'll fuck you up real bad. I like that. Like, and it seems like in the multiplayer too, like if it's you versus a Titan, you still have options. Like it's not like you are less powerful. It's just, you better not get hit.
Yeah. And also a big thing that, I mean, Adam mentioned it earlier, is like rodeoing a Titan. It nonstop feels the best whenever you rodeo an enemy Titan in multiplayer, because it's another player, and you take their battery, which takes like a third of their health, and it just chunks down. And then, you know, obviously they know, like, they don't like advertise this in the campaign because it never happens. You never have enemy pilots flying around you. But in the multiplayer, when an enemy pilot is on top of you, like in your own Titan, it'll beep and say, yeah, you have an enemy pilot on you. Get it off like now. And you have like a couple options. You can spray some like electric smoke and stuff to basically get them off. But you only have like a couple of hits of that. They're almost like fighter pilot flares to get, you know, missiles off of you type situation. But they can just easily rodeo you again if you don't have any help or you don't know where they are. And they can, like I said, throw a grenade into your like little battery area and then just jump off and you're instantly dead. Yeah. Unless you eject, because that's one thing that the campaign also doesn't have in it, is you can manually eject out of your Titan, and you have a couple of options, loadout options with that. You can have it like explode like a nuclear explosion and kill everything in a a small radius while you shoot all the way up in the air. It feels really good because it's basically, if you're surrounded by other enemy titans and you have no health and there's no way to get out, you can just basically nuclear eject and probably, if they don't know any better, you can kill all of them and get like some type of multi-kill or something. It feels really good when that happens.
This sounds legit. Like, not that I was expecting it to, not be fun multiplayer, but like, I don't know. You're kind of convincing me. Like, especially earlier when you said that it's not as sweaty as online FPS can typically get. That's You're doing a hell of a pitch for the multiplayer here.
I think a big reason why it's not as sweaty is because it's not based on kill count.
Yeah,
it's based on points. You can literally stand back and just farm all of the, the enemy AI, which aren't hard. It's the same thing as in the campaign where they, the only way they're going to really kill you is if they gang up on you.
Gotcha.
But you can just slide around the map by yourself and do that. And then even if you lose the match, there is an epilogue state that it goes into where you have to escape like on a ship. So everybody, if you're still alive, you basically an escape ship spawns somewhere on the map. Not in the same spot, but somewhere. If you get to that in enough time, you get extra points for your team and whatnot. So, and that's used to level up and all kinds of stuff like that. And because I do like the progression system in the multiplayer too. It seems very fair. There's no pay to win. It's just a whole bunch of decals and stuff that you can customize your Titan and everything like that. And it's just, everything feels very snappy and everything feels very smooth and good. And the matches are quick. They're never long. It's get in, get out. You can have a good time for a couple hours and then just be fine.
Nice. Cool. Well, that has been Corey's multiplayer corner for Titanfall 2. Appreciate the explanation because, Adam and I didn't try it. So I'm probably not going to play it. I just really don't like being competitive with people online. But like, this does sound like one, I'll hop into Rocket League every now and then and play online. But this sounds like one that does sound like legit a lot of fun. So let's listen to a bit of music. We've got some stuff to clean up and then we'll do our wrap ups before the spoiler section. So we haven't talked really much about how this game looks and sounds yet, and this is going to be, I think, a pretty short section, but I do want to just point out, graphically, I think it looks pretty good. It's a really bright, colorful game for a lot of the levels. Even the inside spaces are not really like dark and depressing or anything like that. It's got a stylized look to it. It's not really going for like super photorealistic faces or anything like that. And a long time ago, Corey, you mentioned the spectacle. So just want to reiterate some of the stages you're in and like maybe in the multiplayer too, but definitely in the campaign. Some of these have like insane spectacle to them. There's a level where you're like on top of moving airplanes and shit, like flying freighters and stuff, and you're jumping between them or being thrown by BT great distances in the air. So, like, spectacle, I think, is, like, one of the big things to take away from the visuals here.
The game is consistently a party.
It is, yeah.
As far as, like, the visuals and art direction, first of all, I think any game from 2016 looks pretty good. I understand that graphics continue to get better, but, like, this still looks exceedingly modern to my eyes. I think that the art direction is consistently strong. It's maybe not my favorite Just in terms of like some of the shapes and stuff that they use for the mechs compared to some other franchises, you know, but like it's got a high baseline. Everything looks good. Everything looks like it fits, and it really does largely avoid generic spaceship interiors, generic corridors. It's much closer to something like James Cameron Avatar, where, you know, mm-hmm. there's lots of beautiful sun-drenched alien landscapes, beautiful skyboxes, even the hostile alien flora and fauna look great, move interestingly, and like, you know, you'll be looking out across a thing and they'll just be alien dragons like gently beating their wings in the distance. And it's just like, man, video games, pretty good.
Yeah, video games, cool
video
stuff.
Games, cool.
Yeah. And again, like visual clarity is a plus too. I think like there's a lot of busy stuff. Again, there's dozens of enemies in a given place. You're trying to find a place to wall run and kick off of and stuff like that. But it's never hard to find those things. It's usually not hard to find enemies either. Like everything stands out. So I think you're right. Like stuff from this era generally looks good, especially if they're going for like kind of a stylized look. It just, you know, doesn't feel like it's aged because they're not trying to make it look like real people. And
yeah.
The last thing that I want to say on the like the presentation and the stages, the one sincere blemish that I feel on the whole thing, I'm curious if this bugs anyone else. I found the stage transitions to be really jarring and bizarre.
Yeah.
Where you would be like having a conversation and then it feels like almost mid-sentence, it just like fades to black, loading screen, mm-hmm. and then it loads you back in like the same room. And I'm just like, what? What just happened?
Yeah. I noticed that too. And I think it is just to keep it rolling, just to keep it moving and getting you back into the, like the action as soon as possible. But it is very jarring. It's just like, oh, we're here now.
Yeah. That just felt like slightly distracting to me compared to the high level of presentation everywhere else.
I guess I didn't notice that. Maybe I'm just kind of itching for these conversations to end so that I can get back to gameplay, because we talked before, like I don't care about the plot of the campaign like in the slightest bit. I also don't really care about any of the characters. Like I don't want anything bad to happen to BT because he's a good boy, but I'm not invested in anybody as a character.
No.
Part of it I think is the voice acting, which is like good and serviceable, but like it's very straight voice acting by numbers, basically. Like Jack Cooper is not a real character and thus does not have any distinguishing factors like from voice performance or anything like that. It's Matthew Mercer who does the voice for Cooper, who I recently learned who Matthew Mercer is. And apparently he's in everything that the other three famous male voice actors don't do. And but you know, we said he's Guy Whitey Shootgood, the impossible white man, and he sounds like it basically too. Like he doesn't even have the charisma of a Nathan Drake or something like that. He's just a guy.
I was just about to mention Nathan Drake and Nolan North as another one who does a lot of that, but he doesn't have that kind of
another charisma. Impossible white man.
Yeah.
Nathan Drake.
Oh, the most impossible white man.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the fun of it, though. But that's a different game.
Yeah. BT has a very, like, Optimus Prime type voice. Nothing more I can really say about BT there.
Yeah.
And the antagonists are all, they all sound like anime villains from different, with basically a smorgasbord of foreign accents. That's how I would describe them.
It's like if you got like the Pacific Rim has-been teams and you're like, what if they were more shallow?
Yeah. And then this one's Australian and this one's Russian and this one is, you know, this one's French. And there we go. Those are our villains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, as much as this game isn't about the story, like a Metal Gear Solid roster of villains would improve things, you know, if we had a the Cobra team. That's it, from the Metal Gear Solid 3, or even the Metal Gear Rising dipshits. I would have appreciated those.
Yeah, and there's no one who approaches Jetstream Sam level of charisma in this game, or no. Sundowner or someone like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you guys mention like the characters and everything, because that is one thing that I thought was very like funny in, I guess, the spoiler wall, like beyond the spoiler wall that's coming up. But I know this world enough that this game is basically just a snapshot of what's going on in the universe. I think this is more of a showcase of what's going on in the universe. Because the universe is actually really cool and really fun and very stylized and all this kind of stuff. As if you ever know of the game Apex Legends, this is basically a prequel to Apex Legends.
Yeah.
Because the main bad guy, quote unquote, who is very Australian, and he's just like this old gruff mercenary. And yeah, he's old gruff mercenary guy. He's basically the start guy, like the guy who starts Apex Legends, which is why he kind of just, So it's really funny that like a lot of these characters are just throwaway, especially the villains are just throwaway because that's exactly what they are. Like they're never mentioned again or anything like that. But they are in a wider narrative. Like they're actually Apex Predators. And because they're like a small separate faction or something like that, who are all mercenary shenaniganized guys. And yeah, you kill them very quickly. You're meant to kill them very quickly because it's not about them. It's about their titans.
Yeah.
All except, like I said, for one, like towards the end and whatnot. But yeah, this, the, all of like the story itself, the plot itself is kind of, it's kind of throwaway in my opinion, because it's more about the world itself. And, you know, it brings up so many, you know, other characters, random people that sound kind of interesting, but they don't have enough screen time. So they're like, I guess this is just another throwaway guy, unless you think he's really, he or she or whatever is, thinks is really cool. Which a lot of people like, if you like playing multiplayer games, you will check it out in Apex Legends, because a lot of lore, like environmental lore and everything, is in Apex Legends. There's tons of it, but only if you like multiplayer. Otherwise, you will have no idea and you won't necessarily care. And it's just a, it's just a fun romp. Like I said, boy and his bot type romp. And that's okay too. That is perfectly fine.
Yeah. I think that that kind of summation there for a lot of people is a good transition to get us into our kind of closing thoughts before we wrap up the non-spoiler part of this episode. So in this section, we always just answer the question, who would we recommend Titanfall 2 to? Adam, I'll kick over to you first.
I had a genuinely great time playing this. Almost exclusively in the wireframe. Again, there will be clowning on the story, but I don't care. You know, I might not care about this world or these characters necessarily. I'm glad that there is more to it. But moving your guy around and piloting your metal dad is fantastic. The level design is world class, and the brisk length makes this an easy recommendation to anyone who is inclined towards this genre.
And Corey.
Yes. I am well aware that people that are not fans of, you know, competitive, generic, sci-fi, multiplayer shooter are going to steer clear of that mode and go straight to story mode only. Which, in my opinion, is a shame, but I understand their proclivities towards such things. But beyond that, like, great level design, movement, and gunplay that you seek. The campaign is in, you know, in small spurts and stuff like that. It utilizes this to great potential. So, if you're looking for a quick, like, four-hour boy and his bot type game that doesn't take itself too seriously at all, but it's still a very fun adventure, then this is absolutely recommended for you. But also, if you really like multiplayer, like one of the best, if you're into that kind of stuff, this is probably the one of the best on the market.
Yeah, I can see that. I will just echo what both of you have said. You know, as someone who's only really going to play the campaign does live up to the hype. It is, you know, it has the reputation again of, it feels like one of those hidden gems that's not actually hidden because everyone says it's a hidden gem, but it is actually good enough for everyone to kind of put it on that pedestal, I think. Like the movement, the gameplay, the gunplay, the level design is all so good. And it's so short too. It's like, it's not a, you know, it's not an immersive sim level commitment to play through this. So it is a good, dumb, fun time just kind of going on the ride with the story. And, you know, when a villain pops up, you go, what a weird little asshole. And then they're gone forever and you move on to the next one. So yeah, I echo the recommendation. Like if you have room for an FPS in your heart, like it might as well be this one. I feel like for a pure FPS, you want to talk about immersive sims or something like that. That's another podcast. You know, I'm here for those too, but yeah. So pretty unanimous recommendation from the three of us to jump into that campaign and then maybe the multiplayer if you're into that kind of thing. So let's do our housekeeping before we get into spoiler time. Well, we start out the housekeeping by having the guests talk about the stuff that they make. So we've got both hosts from Halftone Takes podcast, and then Adam also does some game designing too. So I'll turn the floor over to you guys and talk about the stuff you make.
Yeah. Corey and I are the two hosts of the podcast Halftone Takes, as previously mentioned. It is a cool little interview show where we take turns picking topics and asking the other about media, art, and the creative process. I think that it's a lot of fun. You can listen to the show wherever podcasts are found. You can join us on our Discord and chat with us about it. I also am a game designer, and you can find my games on boocherry.itch.io. That is boo like ghost, cherry like fruit. I make a bunch of tabletop games, as well as other weirdo stuff.
Yes.
Hell yeah. And Halftone Takes is something that I was happy you started a podcast, Adam, and got Corey into it too. And it's a podcast I listen to basically every time one pops up on the feed. So if you guys were to point people to a certain episode that you think is either representative or just, you know, a lot of fun, what would you say? Where would you point people?
Sure. I think that the Goofy movie episode is often cited as as a good onboarding episode, but also we recently
did the Lord of the Rings one.
That was our most recent one. Just being insufferable for like 2.5 hours talk about Lord of the Rings. But the one that I wanted to shout out was that I had my friend, voice actor Scott White, as a guest on one of the episodes, and he talked about his specific experiences being a grunt double, which is to say a voice match impressionist for effort noises during action scenes, which is like such a specific thing that you can make a living doing that. Like, I just I'm so delighted by that. And he's also a gem. He's absolutely a delight. His tail is wagging the entire episode.
That is something I would describe. Like, I would use that description for basically every episode of Halftone Takes. Someone is like that, because kind of the setup of the show is one of you is super passionate about something and the other person interviews that person about that thing, which is you get deep into like the special interest in that particular episode. So that Lord of the Rings episode, I fucking love the Lord of the Rings and I get like 2.5 hours of like absolute fucking nerd fest about Lord of the Rings. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Very grateful that you appreciated that episode.
I knew that was going to be a really good episode for a lot of people because I saw the genuine joy that was radiating off of like Adam, and I knew I hit something special.
You get to listen to my Tom Bombadil Type 5.
That's right. Yeah. You didn't convince me, but I appreciated your side of it. And Corey, I understand that you have a creative work of your own.
Yes. I have a webcomic on Webtoons called Dawn of Time. Okay. And It is really cool. It is about the first Mother Time. So that is an ongoing webcomic on Webtoons, on the app, and also like on the internet, on like a desktop. So go check that out. It's really cool. It's very sci-fi fantasy, if you're into that. And yeah, I really like it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So everyone can look down in the show notes for a link to Dawn of Time and Adam's Games and Halftone Takes. So you all have a lot to click around and discover while I talk about myself for the next minute or so. So if you would like to support this podcast, the best thing to do to help juice the algorithm in my favor is to leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict support those types of things, so that when people look for Titanfall 2 podcast episodes, they might find this one. And that's what we want, right? You can also join the Discord server for this podcast. You can come in, talk about Titanfall 2 this week, talk about the other games on the show, tell us what you're playing. We have a couple of cool things going on this year. We have a backlog resolutions challenge going on in the Discord server. If you got stuff in your backlog that you need a little peer pressure to actually play, come on in. We have a challenge going on. We also have our wonderful gaming log in the Discord server where people post the games that they finish, and we have like a museum in there of all the games that people have finished. It's really nice. I'm always happy to read through how everyone feels about the games they play. We also have a Patreon if you want to support monetarily. Patreon.com/RealDaveJackson is the place. Every month we have a poll for a game to appear on the show. Again, Titanfall 2 was the winner, so if you want a little influence on what games appear in the polls, you can do that. All patrons can vote in those polls. And also, I have another podcast because I'm a maniac. It's called A Top 3 Podcast. That one's a simple pitch. It's top three lists. And who doesn't love a good list? So, I think you'll enjoy that, and I think you'll enjoy listening to this music. When we come back, it's going to be full spoiler time for Titanfall 2. Right, we're back. Adam, Corey, and I are ready to dive in for full spoilers for Titanfall 2. And I mentioned this at the top of the show, but this spoiler section is not really going to be plot focused. I just want to talk about how cool some of these levels are. And we're not actually going to talk about every single level, but I do want to shout out the cool ones along the way and some cool moments that happen. So the intro level just kind of like teaches you how to play. And then the next one, called Blood and Rust, is one where you get separated from BT. And so there's, I just wanted to shout this out as like a cool, well-paced level where like you're kind of running through this interior like sewer type level, trying to get back to BT. And it just, they really set up these moments where like you're fighting back to get to BT, like you can see him on the other side of a grate, but you can't reach him, so you got to go around the long way. And like when you finally get back and reunite with BT, it's really cool. When you, like we said, it's kind of tough. It's the second level. It's definitely harder than the first level is. So when you get back into BT and suddenly you're just mowing everybody down, it's super cool. It's just a nice kind of level for that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good way to establish basically the rhythm of the game itself.
Yeah.
You're going to go, be separated, get back to BT. You're going to go, get separated, or like leave BT for a little bit, then come back and
fight a boss at the end. Yeah.
And it's worth saying that, like, you are not BT's original pilot. The original pilot dies, and then BT looks at you and is like, engaging adoption protocol. You are now my son.
Yeah.
Almost in exactly that fashion, too. So. Yeah.
Would you like some apple slices? I also have a note that says, there is a person named Kane here. He dies instantly and is not relevant.
Yeah, it's basically the story for all of the bosses. You go through the level. Here's the rhythm, right? You go through the level. You might hear the name or you might hear them on the radio.
Yeah.
You don't know why they're important, but they sound evil. So.
Correct.
Then you fight them at the end of the level and they're never mentioned ever again.
Yeah. There's like one point where someone's like, did that guy die? And someone else is like, yeah. And it's like, oh, man, that's about like the most you get.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I were him, I would just simply not die. Well, it sucks to suck. My turn next.
Try wall running next time, dipshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next level is called Into the Abyss. And I forgot how early this level is. It's like the third level. Like they do the intro to teach you how to play. Then they do Blood and Rust to kind of like
ease you in.
Like ease you in, but kind of raise the challenge a little bit. And then they're like, okay, you ready for the cool shit? Because the cool shit's starting in level 3. So this, for people following who have played and don't know the levels by name, this is the one where you're on the assembly line where these houses are being mass produced. And we talked about scale and spectacle earlier, like, these are full-size houses being constructed over an abyss, a bottomless pit,
basically.
Basically. Like,
this cavernous room that these houses and this assembly line is working in, basically. So the scale is crazy.
It's an assembly line making, like, prefab neighborhoods.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, by this point, you know that, like, the IMC... they're evil, right? And this is an IMC factory. And you don't know why they're making these houses at first. And I was like, oh, okay. So I don't know are they colonizing planets and they need to just put up like the Desperate Housewives neighborhoods in every planet that they take over or something like that? Or are they housing the homeless or something? Yeah. Nope.
Not the Empire.
No. Making these houses for combat simulations. And that is the only reason they're doing this.
They need to get combat data for the orphan crushing machine.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Nah, that'd be too expensive. We don't have any orphan. We'll just do it ourselves.
You cannot talk about anything in this game being expensive because the amount of property damage that is done is in the trillions.
It is
grotesque waste of resources.
Hey. I'm going to just really quick aside of like actual, you know, lore, which is actually really funny. Mm-hmm. The IMC is literally the Empire. They throw away tech like it's like paper cans plastic bottles and everything. So it's really funny that you say that because they literally do that with like giant planets and stuff. They're like, we don't need this anymore. It's fine.
But I had written this down. This is like your first, like, holy shit, this movement system, this combat, like you go in and like the house is just like one wall of a house. Right. And then maybe there's like a fucking shelf stuck on the wall and you ride that for a bit and then you have to jump off and go into these like combat things on these, I don't know, these platforms, and there's a bunch of dudes, staircases, walls to run on and stuff like that. And you're just constantly moving from like combat arena into like moving houses that are more constructed every time you jump in.
Yeah.
And it's got a really good like flow state to the whole level, basically. I mean, the whole game basically does, but this one's really noteworthy because of like, I think the scale of the place and how it's all taking place over bottomless pits and just super fun.
Yeah. For me, this is a wonderful display of the developers really understanding what they've created and then finding the best possible way to showcase those strengths, mm-hmm. where they're just like, hey, a fun verb is for you to move like this, jump like this, do this sequence, do this little gauntlet, and then while you're in midair, start shooting fools on the other side, and then power slide down, and then run up a staircase, and then jump onto the next part of the conveyor belt and leave people behind. And, like, all of that is, like, one seamless motion. And there's a lot of games that you play that feel like they have like some conflict in their central identity, or they don't quite know how to express the strengths of what they've created. And this like just totally is a show stopping moment. And again, level 3, like, yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
And it showcases also the level design of they're willing to play around with it at all cost type situation, because you know how the assembly line is, it flips upside down. It makes that like almost like a, you know, like a movement puzzle in itself where you have to like, how am I supposed to get out of this and everything? Yeah. Because it's being made throughout the entire level, which I always dug that is like, wow, if you stand kind of off, like at a distance, you can see each like part being made in these like prefab, like almost neighborhoods, and you can go and just play around in it. You can get killed by it slamming like a wall down and just to, you know, just to see that, or you could just run through it as it's being like bolted down to like these, you know, platforms and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's all very cool. And then at the end, they've fully assembled the neighborhood, and then they rotate the entire neighborhood at 90 degrees. And now you have to jump on the sides of buildings and cars and stuff in order to finish your navigation. Just super cool, super playful, super creative. A++ level design, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and Adam, tell us about the villain of this level.
I'd love to. There's a person named Ash here. She dies instantly and is not relevant.
And I want to add, she's not relevant in the campaign. Nobody cares about story mode Ash. Everybody cares about sexy competitive multiplayer mode Ash.
Okay.
So that's really fascinating to me. Are all the bosses like characters that you can play as in the multiplayer?
No, they're in the multiplayer, there's factions, right? So like, you know, Ash is a part of like an actual specific faction. Like this whole pre-made like prefab like factory, mm-hmm. is hers. So, you know, the bad guy, the ultimate bad guy, gave her all this money to do all these things and do all these, you know, experiments with robotics and stuff like that. And, you know, classic villain stuff. So right. It's like, oh, okay. So you can join her faction in the multiplayer and just be a, you know, a mustache twirling bad guy. And, you know, it's just another customization option. Gotcha. It doesn't necessarily mean anything except lore reasons.
But like the other bosses don't show up as characters in the same way.
Only one other one does. Everybody else is kind of like lame. And which is why I think it's really funny when like the previous thing you said, like Kane dies. I'm like, who's Kane? I don't even remember him. So
that's kind of
anyway, sexy mode Ash.
Everyone loves sexy story mode Ash. It's too bad that I fucking mulched her. Yeah. R.I.P.
Well, no, everybody hates sexy story mode Ash. Everybody loves competitive multiplayer mode Ash.
Right. Yep. Okay, next up is another very, very cool level. Probably the most famous level, I think, from this game, called Effect and Cause. And this is a time warp game. You go to this place that I think there is like the time jump is happening before you get the bracelet, I think, right? Like it's jumping between times or something like that.
It's like ambiently switching between the times uncontrolled by the player, and then you get the ability to control it.
Right. So at first you're kind of like timing it a little bit, or like you get into some combat and like the time will switch and then you switch into the future where there's no combat. And then you're just kind of feeling this out. Eventually, the person you're looking for, Captain Anderson, there is a Captain Anderson in like seven fucking video games.
For sure.
You find him. He unfortunately got stuck in a ceiling during one of the time jumps. Oops. And you get his bracelet where you can control the time jumps, and it sets up both puzzles where you are like wall running and changing time while you're in midair and stuff like that, and situations where you're fighting enemies. Like there's combat in both times. And you can do, it's so fucking fun to switch the time, fight for a bit, but also maneuver behind where the enemies are in the other time, then switch back, shoot them in the back a few times, switch back, and like you're in total control of two different combat scenarios at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be clear, in case like the way that we've described it is difficult to wrap your head around, there are two parallel versions of the same map happening simultaneously. And with the push of a button, you can switch between these two versions of the map. There's the version in the past, which is pristine, and then the version in the present, which is destroyed and I want to say post-apocalyptic, but I feel like
it's on fire.
It's on fire.
That's exactly it's on fire.
It's trashed.
Yeah.
And so you'll be in the past where there are animals locked in cages, and then you'll go to the present where the animals have escaped. And, you know, both of those things are simultaneously true. Really neat gimmick. Cool stuff.
Yeah. And it's so cool. And then it's gone. Yep. Like, this is the only level that uses it. Like, they could have done the whole campaign with this and I would have had fun with it. But it's just a one level thing.
And this is what I talk about when it's like, this is not a lazy campaign where they're just taking the multiplayer maps and recycling them. This is a unique idea that doesn't exist in the multiplayer or any other part. It's just this level. Mm-hmm. And they really like make a statement with it, do a bunch of cool stuff, and then let it go. And I find that really admirable. Maximum effort. Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is by far like the most famous level in the entire game. And it is really fun. Funnily enough, this is the only mission where I would die multiple times to enemies because they would constantly gang up on me because I would overestimate. Uh-huh. You know, I would, you know, go into one, like the future, and they would just, you know, I'd be fighting them, but then I would get low health. So I would go into the other, like to the past. But an enemy in the past is, an enemy in the past is where like the people, like actual soldiers are. The future, which is the present where you are, has security bots that will explode if they get too close to you. So I would constantly like, oh, yeah, I could just go over here and heal my health. Oh, yeah, they snuck up on me and now they will instantly explode and kill me. So
it was funny to like throw a grenade in the past and then warp to the future and then just be like, wonder how that went.
Yeah. it's cool too. Like there was just like I forget if it's an empty button on the controller that wasn't used for anything or if they took something that you never use away for this, but it's like seamless into your kit. Like it takes like 30 seconds. Then you're like, oh yeah, I get this.
It replaces your stealth cloaking function, which is so important that we all forgot to mention.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I, you know, what's funny. I completely forgot it too, because I never
use it.
Yeah. And then like, there are those fun platforming challenges where like, you'll wall run on like the right side, but the left side is on fire. So you have to jump, switch time when you're in midair, then wall run on the left. But like the one on the right's broken and you keep switching between times while you're doing the wall running and double jumping. And I don't know. It's just fucking cool. And I read a little bit of like dev history for this level where they talked about how unsurprisingly, this was hard to get to work. But the finished product, it works perfectly and it's awesome.
Yeah. Especially my favorite part in that is when you have to fall through like a shaft.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And you have to switch it really quickly or you will either run into a fan or you will run into fire. And it's really funny.
I saw that and I was like, am I supposed to jump in there? And I jumped in there and just instantly fucking died. And I was like, well, that was stupid. They shouldn't make it look like I could jump down there. And I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah, the fan's probably broken. And then that has to be one of the most video game ass things to do is all the times when you go in like fan shafts in video games.
Oh,
you have to deal with the fan somehow. And in this one, you time travel past it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Titanfall is a world where sewers would have a 40-foot ceiling.
Yes. Because you got to fit a Titan
down. Have a 40. Yeah. Sewers do have a 40-foot ceiling. BT's got to get in there somehow.
Switching between the time platforms that you wall run was specifically what I was thinking when I said, if a vertical platform to wall run against is not available, one will be provided to you.
Yeah.
There will be something to wall run against. Worry not, friends.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this level, I remembered it from the first time I played it. I remember how much people talk about how cool it is. And I was wondering like, oh, I already know how this works. Will the shine still be there? Yes, it was. This is, like I said, I could have played the whole game with this gimmick. But again, like you said, Adam, really confident decision by them where they're like, hey, this took us a really long time and a lot of effort to make it work. And we're never using it again.
Yeah, I can only imagine the technical challenges that had to be overcome to make it look so effortless.
Yeah. So the next mission is called the Beacon, and this is one where you have some kind of like device that can remotely interact with these panels and move platforms into place for yourself. You also are moving stuff that's on cranes to set up wall running stuff. This is like emblematic of the thing I said earlier where I said these are not real places. These are playgrounds for your moveset, and like there's no way that this place would exist in any sci-fi universe if people were not able to wall run.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a situation where it's just like, how do they get to their jobs?
Yeah.
You know, it's like imagining like what does it feel like to work at the Spencer Mansion? It's just like, well,
yeah,
not good.
Yeah,
not good. I mean, it's very it's almost Mirror's Edge-esque where you know, if you really think about it, Mirror's Edge is like a city set up with a whole bunch of outside doors that lead to nowhere. So you can and they're only meant to for you to bust into them and then like run in the inside and then bust out of another door that leads straight to a roof that goes all the way down and has like a straight drop. Mm-hmm. It's like, why is this here? Oh, it's only for me.
Yeah, so, it's for me, the player.
Yep.
Yeah. Your Rain World episode just came out, and the stark contrast between the cruel indifference of that game versus the everything is made for you.
Yeah.
Here is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There's a neat gimmick that I enjoyed is that there are these giant turbines, which they're doing some kind of aerodynamics test, I can only assume. I can't even describe this facility, but basically it's like giant wind tunnels, and then you're moving these platforms in order to block the wind or create stuff. There's some neat challenges there, but at one point you can activate it, and you have to follow the wind, so it launches you down, and then you do like a 200-mile-an-hour wall run across like all these curving surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. When it comes to the giant turbines, I'm a huge fan.
That's right. That's in the indoor section before you go up on like the towers with the cranes and shit. There's an indoor section. I think that's the place where they're like, You can only be in there for like a really short time. The radiation will destroy you.
Yeah, and so then, it's hyper cooled. That's why there's a lot of turbines around, because it's like cooling it
right
like all the time.
And then you go in there, you do your impossible white man shit in like 20 seconds, and you come out, and they're like, "Whoa."
Yeah,
they literally said that. They're like, "Wow, you did a really good job. Yeah. I didn't think you could do it."
Yeah, they're just like, the last guy we sent in there didn't do so well. And then it cuts to Solid Snake crawling through the microwave tunnel and just being like, "Come on, man.
I'm doing the best I can.
I'm doing the best I can." And then your guy just like stunts on him.
So this level, like when you're up on the tower, has those platforming sections. Kind of similar to the last level where you're like in midair hacking panels to like bring up stuff for you to wall run or jump on top of. And it also introduces something that will become a thing like in most of the later levels where BT picks you up and throws you. And I think they call it a fastball. Yeah. Thank you, Adam, for writing it in the notes. A
fastball. In universe, it's called a fastball.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cute. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty funny. I make a note here that at one point you go up and there's a satellite and your character takes their knife out, presses a thing, turns it into a USB and stabs it into the console in order to drive the console around. And I was like, I'm sorry, video game. We're on level 5 and you just told me that I've got a hack knife. What the fuck?
The hack knife is really cool.
What are you talking about? The handle of the hack knife is like a joystick controller?
Yeah.
It's so wild.
It's the same knife that you stab into people's necks, but also it doubles as, and they do this like several times in the campaign, where you just open up a panel, jam the knife into it, and it hacks it automatically.
Yeah, it hacks it,
It's very funny because that's like a press and hold input, and I would always tap the button, which means that I would just go up to the panel and like stab it a couple times and then stop. And then I'd be like, oh, wait, I should do it the whole way. But it like, but he just has like a couple fun party stabs in him that he just has to get out of his system before.
those are for me. Those I'll get to me. Business in a minute.
I thought it would work. That's why I did it.
Yeah, so after calibrating the satellite, you get thrown off. BT dramatically catches you in midair at the last moment. You give BT a thumbs up. He gives you a thumbs up, and it's very cute.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, tell us about the villain in this level.
God, I would love to. There's a person named Richter here, and he dies instantly is not relevant. He does sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I was about to say, like, he's kind of relevant because he sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah.
When they were drawing up characters, they basically were like, well, okay, so here's what we're doing. We're making anime villains with different accents. They're all the same person.
Yeah.
Generally. But, okay, so accents for evil villains. Well, we got to have an Arnold Schwarzenegger accent, and then we'll figure out the rest.
Yeah, that's almost exactly how the pitch meeting went. then at the end of the mission, you meet up with a rebel person, and they're just like, oh, you're not a real pilot. We'll get a real pilot in you, BT, the actual adult in the room. Mm-hmm. And then in the notes I put, but BB-8 assures her that he has adopted you.
That's right. Yeah.
I thought that was on purpose. So
it was a joke that I wrote for myself. I just forgot.
That scene where they basically are like, yeah, okay, you've had your fun, Cooper, but it's time to get, you know, a real person in there, and BT sticks up for you. If this game has anything going for it story-wise, it's the dynamic between Cooper and BT. And so this is this mission, you know, BT picks you up and throws you, and then there's a part where you get launched and he catches you and then sticks up for you at the end. So that's, you know, on display here too. I don't give a shit about like the actual story, but it is cute. The bond between the two of you.
Yeah,
for sure.
The idea that BT is taking care of you basically is the whole heart of the whole campaign. It could just be them two and no other person. It could be all robots and it would still, you know, it would still work in my opinion. So,
yeah, taking care of you and, you know, the leaders or whatever the, of the army, whoever the fuck you work for, doubting you, despite, as we said, Cooper being the greatest pilot who's ever existed, even though this is his second day on the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next mission is called Trial by Fire. This didn't really stand out to me, except it's just a ton of gear combat, and gear combat is fun. So this is cool.
Yeah. Agreed. At the start of this, I did write a note. I'm just going to read the note verbatim. As you're getting ready to get deployed, a maintenance robot gives you a thumbs up, completely sabotaging the emotional payoff of IG-88 giving you a thumbs up. Immersion ruined, character development destroyed. It's just a thing that robots do. I fucking hate this game. My day is ruined.
All the robots just give high fives.
They're
all
just
the time.
Thumbs up bots.
Well,
he doesn't even know how to clean. He just does thumbs up.
What is my purpose? You give thumbs up. Oh my God.
You guys sound really racist to robots, which is really funny because I think in the previous mission, when you take a certain gun, like the art gun, away from the robot, he like does a sad face, like he took his only thing.
Yeah, I sniped that robot from across the room, so.
Yeah, definitely racist.
That robot can also do thumbs down.
There are...
Exactly.
Very advanced.
Ambiently, there's just a bunch of maintenance robots scattered all throughout the levels, and I did make sure to just, like, kick a bunch of them for no reason.
Wow.
This level's cool. I said it's gear combat. I kind of undersold. It's like you have a team of gears, and you're fighting another team of gears, or Titans, not Gears. What the fuck? Xenogears. I'm playing Xenogears. That's why I wrote Gears in the notes. Titans. Mm. You're fighting a bunch of Titans. So it's kind of cool to be in like a big battle like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where the spectacle is. That's definitely a big spectacle moment in the campaign.
And it can be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, this was probably the level that I died the most on, just because I feel like I was less good at the Titan combat than the pilot combat. But it is cool to just, like, here's a bunch of dudes and, like, have a big, prolonged, large-scale battle. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of, like, rando foot soldiers, and if you've got, like, the multi-lock missile thing, it's just like, sorry, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, Corey, you had a note. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is the only time where I would switch to another different loadout, because you get different loadouts as you're playing through the campaign,
mm-hmm.
because of all of the, you know, the insane amount of Titans they throw at you all at once.
Yeah.
And there is a loadout called Scorch, which is, you know, a separate class in the game, in the multiplayer. But in here, it's just something that BT could pick up. And he's like, well, I can do all of this now. So I would just constantly throw fire everywhere, throw like these little canisters that you get of like gas that you could just set ablaze, and just, you know, the little like the little enemies that are running around the map that you can squish. Mm-hmm. I would just throw like a canister like right near them and just light them all on fire, and it's really funny and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I had a great time doing that to other people, except it was the exact opposite, and that happened to me all the time, just getting lit on fire by those Scorch Titans. Yeah. All right, the next level, this in the story, basically the IMC has this weapon of mass destruction called the ARC, because they pulled that out of the big handy list of sci-fi terms, sci-fi proper nouns. So it's called the ARC, and they're about to get away with it. So you're chasing them. The next mission is called the ARC, where they got it on a plane, and then you take off in a plane, and you're chasing them also. And this is the level I talked about earlier in the non-spoiler part, but like you're going from ship to ship, like BT picks you up and throws you onto a ship, and then you should be good at the combat by now. So you go in, you clear out the ship like really quickly. Then you go to another ship. There's a part in here where like a SWAT team basically like clears out a command center in like half a second. That's pretty cool to take part in. And then you fight a villain named Viper on top of the ship. Adam, tell us about Viper.
I'm so glad you asked. Viper, there's a person named Viper here. He dies instantly and... psych! He doesn't die instantly. You think you kill him, but then he comes back and he fucks up BT pretty good. BT loses an arm in the scuffle. There's a cool moment where Viper is grappling with BT while you have been ejected, and you have to finish off Viper, the character, by his pilot. His cockpit is open, and you just have to shoot bullets into the human being that's driving the big robot. Pretty neat moment.
Which you never do, basically. Like, you never fight boss people in this game. It's always Titan bosses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By default, Viper is the best character that we have seen in the game so far.
Right.
Yeah. I will 100% back up. Viper is the best character in this campaign. or at least bad guy. He is a fan favorite. Just because he seems how... I heard it described where a lot of the villains, most of the villains in this campaign, like the main boss people, are just kind of crazy. And they're like, hoo-hoo, almost cackling crazy.
Yeah.
Viper's the only cool one. He's almost like a Boba Fett-esque character, which is why a lot of people kind of like him. He's just like, nah, this is my job. I'm going to go do my job. I can actually kill you type thing. And, you know, I'm not going to go crazy. I'm going to be just... cool. I'm going to be as cool as a cucumber the entire time. I know I can kill you. It's just, I'm going to take my time with
it. Spoiler, he can't.
Yes, of course.
Spoiler, I fucking killed him.
Also, I have two other things, which is really, which I find really funny. Viper is the hardest boss in this game for me, but not because of him specifically. It's because of where you fight him. You fight him on top of the ship, and he's flying around you, sniping at you.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times I have lost my footing and just fallen off the ship.
Yep, happened to
me
too.
And just been like, oh. It's like, I had him, and obviously I'm died falling damage, of course. Also, another big thing, and this is for me personally, the SWAT team faction that you take, like, the command center ship from.
Mm-hmm.
They are called the 6-4. They are the best faction. No cap. Don't at me. They are the best, to me, most likable characters because they do have like a lot of, you know, different actual personalities, which you don't get enough of, obviously, in this campaign. You see them for 2 seconds and they're like, hey, have a good one. Look us up next time you like are around. But in the, you know, in the multiplayer, they're like expanded and like their leader is always talking a lot of shit. And it's hilarious because he's like all for the 6-4 and stuff. And that's why it's like it's a huge meme. Because they are obviously like the best like faction. And if you choose anything else in the multiplayer, kind of weird or scrub or what have you, it's just one big, like obviously inside joke, but I'm glad they got the screen time that they did on in the campaign because they do the coolest thing and you participate in that. And it's like, cause your role, what you were mentioning before, Dave, with you, like jumping in between ships, you wall run in between on the side of ships and then jump back into other ones and stuff.
Yeah.
It's actually really high intensity and stuff like that. And they're doing it with you. It's the only time you kind of see other pilots kind of wall running with you and saying, hey, come this way, let's go. And, you know, you see kind of the full potential if you're with another team and how effective you can be in a group. And I think that's really funny and just really cool.
It's a really cool level, like visually the spectacle of it, like it's this group of ships chasing a group of other ships, like flying through this canyon. And then when, like you said, you're wall running, jumping between these ships, but below you, you can see like, you know, thousands of feet below you, just the ground down there. when BT throws you in this level, he talks about how like, you're like, oh, just like last time. And he's like, nah, bro, this is way harder than last time. Like, and he kind of like, he almost like licks his finger and tests the wind before he throws you. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the last level is called the Fold Weapon. And this is, you're trying to go get the Ark again. But at the end of the last mission, you may have killed Viper, but you got caught. So they, at the beginning of this, they fuck up BT real hard. He's basically just like, you know, just, I don't know, a torso hanging there.
He's a torso and like one arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hanging there. They kind of do what all bad fictional villains do, and they just kind of like, they're like, oh, well, he's not shit without his Titan. We can just leave him lying on the ground. He's asleep. He's fine. But you wake up, you talk to BT. He gives you this hidden, like, emergency kit, like, in his head, basically, that contains his AI core, a pistol, and a knife. And I was like, oh, okay, this is a disempower the character, but let me show off how good I am at the game type of thing. Which I was like, okay, I'm up for that. That's not how it is. This is actually like one of the easiest sections in the whole game, and you feel like a fucking badass. You have like a cyberpunk smart weapon that just auto aims at everything on the screen. Yeah. And you're just like wall running, shooting like six dudes at the same time. It's awesome.
It instantly locks onto all enemies in the area, kills everything with one shot.
Yeah.
And it has a huge ammo capacity and infinite reload ammo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's absolutely a victory lap.
Yeah. Yeah, the smart pistol is OP. Because it is, what's funny is it's in the multiplayer too.
Oh,
you don't
shit.
Have as much ammo, but the smart pistol is very OP, and
lock on as fast as it does in, because it's instant.
Oh yeah, it locks. You don't have very much ammo at all. Like you have six shots, so you have to make them count.
Got
and
you.
It's kind of like almost a super in a way. Like it's like an ultimate move. But really, if anybody sees you like using that in multiplayer, they'll clown you to no end. They're like, really, bro? You gotta win that badly? So I'm glad in this, you know, mission, obviously, you're meant to be like, this is a last resort thing. So just go ham. Just go.
Type thing. I wanna go back in time and talk about the interrogation scene between the bad guy and BT real fast, because once again, they're talking to BT like he's the adult in the room and you're just incidental. but they're just like, you give us what we want, robot. We're gonna kill your pilot, and you like your pilot. And then BT turns to you and he's just like, wink, trust me, bro. And then he turns to the bad guy and he's like, I'm sorry, I've dropped my reading glasses. Can you please move within punchable range? And the bad guy's like, sure thing, buddy.
Yeah. It actually kind of goes down like that,
it's
too,
exactly,
which is really
like
funny.
That. Engaging anti-stinker protocols.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get to do this cool victory lap level. I like a victory lap in games. I like a super gravity gun. I like a, you know, letting you just stunt on the final stretch of it. It is kind of undercut to me by the fact that there's seemingly no reason that your robot didn't give you the auto murder gun that lives in his head right away. I don't know why he saved it.
Yeah.
The fact that it lives in his face. Weird to me, but
well, it's
okay.
Like, yeah, it's like you could take it out. I'll just take the pistol out and then I'll put your AI core back in. Like, we can just do that in
the
first
gun is
level.
Not related to the AI core. Like, if you like narrative, like I'm gonna overthink the narrative in a way, but like, what if the gun only works because you plugged BT into it and BT is your gun for the moment? Like,
right.
That would be,
yeah,
like, make it feel better to me, narratively speaking. But as it is, it's still cool, so I'm not gonna fuss about it.
Like, I can speak a little bit on that. Narratively, it should work more like in the multiplayer does. You only have like six shots and they're for a last resort thing, but they don't miss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's called like the smart pistol. It's not so, you're literally supposed to use it as a last resort if you really need to. But, you know, in this level, cause it's very video gamey, you have infinite ammo. You don't run out and you don't need to run out.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's one of those things, but yeah, it doesn't necessarily matter because it moves too quick for you to notice. If you notice that, you're not moving fast enough. Start running.
BT, your best friend and dad, gave you an infinite scroll of magic missile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet you choose not to run. And yet you don't choose run.
I'm a run. I'm a wall run. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, after just a couple minutes of stunting on fools, a brand new BT drops out of orbit.
Yeah.
And you get to put his brain in, and then BT's back, baby.
Yeah, you actually get to, like, do the call in the Titanfall, which, you know.
Mm-hmm. Happens surprisingly rarely in this game.
Yeah, you're usually with your Titan the whole time, but you do get to do it this time. And yeah, you just get a shiny new BT. You know, I was thinking, did either of you play Cyberpunk 2077?
I did.
I have not.
Okay.
Adam got it for me for my birthday.
Oh, look at that.
I did. Awesome. It was at launch, which wasn't great.
Yeah, no.
Did I get you the PS4 version?
No, you got me the computer.
Oh,
you got me the Steam
God.
Version.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. Oh, Adam, you're smart. You're very smart. You got me the one that I could just let it sit and
the one that works. Know? Yeah.
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 Yeah, the reason I ask is because there is a like smart pistol part kind of like fairly early on in that game too, which is fucking awesome. And I wonder if they took a little inspiration from Titanfall in that.
Sure.
So it's cool.
Yeah, it does feel like that. Actually.
Also very Fifth Element, you know. So I'm sure there's lots of instances that they're referencing.
Yeah
probably.
But yeah, the Titanfall is cool again, like that scale, like Corey, you talked about it when you're talking about the multiplayer, but like it's like a coming down from space and shit, and you can see it coming, and like the scale of it is really cool. And then you go fight a another Titan boss.
I didn't put down their name and I have no memory.
No, it's the only thing that I remember is it's not Blisk.
Yeah.
It's the girl with the laser.
It's
the girl with the laser. Yeah. Yes. She dies instantly and is no longer relevant after you kill her. And then Blisk has a little bit of character to him because you see the boss calls in and tells him to kill you. And he's like, nah, it's not my contract. And then he leaves.
You didn't say the magic word.
Yeah. That was literally it. He's like, yeah, I'm not. Yeah, nah, bro.
Yeah.
That's extra.
And then after that, so like the reactor core in the arc can be destabilized. Or sorry, the arc can be destabilized. But the only way to do it is BT jumping into it, basically, and sacrificing himself. And so your robot dad, in the emotional moment in the game, sacrifices himself to destroy the weapon of mass destruction. You get this really cool visual thing where you dive in. I forget why you dive in. I didn't write it
down.
You
load yourself into a gun.
And you shoot yourself into it.
And you shoot yourself at it.
Yeah, it is kind of like that.
And then it's one of those things where like, you are wall running and jumping, and you're jumping out into empty space, and then like a wall falls down in the perfect space for you to wall run on as you're trying to make your escape from this. I don't know where the fuck you are. Like, wherever you are, it's too dangerous for a human to be there.
Yeah. Well,
so what it is is that. Oh, sorry, okay. Corey, did you want to take it?
Yeah, I was going to explain actually what it is, because I actually do like this kind of spectacle, like escape.
Yeah, it's cool.
Because what it is, it's like almost like it's making like a black hole and you have to escape it, because what happens is you have to get to this certain area where the dropship can beam itself in, pick you up, and then beam itself right back out into low orbit, so you don't die with the collapse of the planet type situation, which is really cool. And like the spectacle of it, because it does like hype you up in its intensity. It's like, no, you got to get out of there because,
yeah,
you know, the whole planet's actually going to collapse. And we can only hyper whatever, like light boost in for like 2 seconds. You gotta be where we're gonna boost in, and then we're just gonna boost out. So if you miss that window, you're dead.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's really cool that you're using all that you learn throughout the campaign to just kind of wall run, jump, slide down, you know, spiral and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's basically all it is. I think it's really a really cool sense of like final spectacle, I guess.
It is cool. We're basically like the chunks of the planet that are disintegrating under your feet, like provide a wall running platform for you. It's neat. We neglected to mention, however, that after BT loads himself into a gun and shoots himself at the core of the planet, he engages his noble self-sacrifice protocol, yanks you from his chest, and then tosses you bodily out into the void so that he can go and punch the planet. I don't fucking know what happened.
The orbit thingy.
He dies twice in a half an hour, and that's more than I could handle. His last words were, "Superman."
Yeah. Got me again. That's what I have to say. Got me again.
But yeah, so you do all this wall running on debris, and then the ship pops in, catches you, and then pops back out right before the planet blows up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's like an ending where Cooper is going to be promoted to a real pilot.
Yeah. All that, and he just gets promoted.
Yeah.
Good job. Pat on the back.
It would have been kind of funny if he gets to the end and they're like, I don't know. Like,
you're still not badass enough. You got to do that again.
So, yeah, if you were into the story, he's becoming, he has become a real boy at the end of this.
Yeah.
And then they're going to erase his neural link with BT and give him a new Titan. And, that feels bad. BT's your robot dad, and you're going to forget all about him. Or not forget, but they're not going to make a new one, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But you could always make a new friend. Because there's different AI, so you just make a new friend. You can get a new dad.
It's a weird note to end on.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
But your main character is confronted by like a guy, and he's just like, I don't know if we should promote you. And then he's just like, oh, check it out, I got this time travel device on my hand, I went into the future, it turns out that I'm your boss, so you better promote me now. Like, oh. Oh well, sir, yes sir.
He didn't throw away the time travel thing. He probably,
I think it broke.
It broke at the end. Yeah.
And then we say, yeah, that's just all cool. Let's go to multiplayer. Wait, where are you going?
Yeah, I was going to say,
where are you guys going?
This is the point where the campaign is over and everybody uninstalls the game.
Or just goes to Apex Legends. Or uninstalls the game.
I'll keep it installed. I'll play this again.
Yeah, but fun game for sure. And a really fun set of levels in the campaign. Something, again, like I can see myself going back and replaying it every now and then. I'm not sure that I've played another game like this that feels as good to play 8 years later as this game does. Mm-hmm. That being said, I don't fuck with Apex Legends or, you know, anything. So if that game or Overwatch or something like that feels this good to play, I wouldn't know. But as far as like first person games or like single player games, I still think this is pretty much unmatched as far as that goes. And then like throw in that level design on top of it, it's, you know, excellent still.
Yeah. The fact that this and Doom 2016 came out in the same year, pretty wild.
Yeah. Good year for FPS fans that don't want to play multiplayer.
Good year for FPS games that I want to play.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was about to say good year for just FPS sci-fi games. Because I also know that the reason why it didn't do as well by like a marketing standpoint, I'm pretty sure Call of Duty Infinite came out like the same year too, or very close to it. And it just got buried. It got buried by not only that, but another like mainline like Battlefield game as well. Mm-hmm. So it just got completely like, oh, this is kind of less important than these AAA games. And in my opinion, it stands out. Now, mind you, I do, of all types of FPS campaigns, a lot of newer ones really suck, especially nowadays in like the Call of Duty franchise. They've been like creatively bankrupt for years. But Call of Duty, like Infinite Warfare, actually had a great sci-fi like campaign. I think it's about the same like length too. It's pretty quick and everything, but it's a lot more obviously quote unquote serious and stuff. But it, I still like that. So it was definitely competing with that too. But I think a lot of people gravitate to this one a lot more. It's because it's a lot more fun. There's a lot less gravitas in this campaign.
Yeah. I don't particularly have a horse in the race of like, which, and also like, I'm not invested in like bullying Call of Duty. Like, it's fine. I'm sure it's simply not for me, but, as far as like the things that appeal to me, I'm of the opinion that like the perfect racing game is Mario Kart because it tells gravity to go fuck itself and, you know, just does not feel bound by realism. Like, I know that people love realistic racing games. They're just not what I'm after. I'm after that unreality. I'm after the infinite possibility space that video games can provide me. And same with shooters. Like, I'm not that interested in a military simulator, like an Arma or something. I want something wacky. I want to be able to wall run. I want to have grappling hooks. I want to have weird weapons that don't make any sense, that make that one guy on YouTube very frustrated. those are all virtues to me. And therefore, like, this is a game that, like, really does appeal to me. And it is almost my ideal of what I would want from a game like this.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And like there are Call of Duty campaigns that are really good. And as far as I know, like the multiplayer gameplay in that series is still really fun. If that's what you like, it's still they're still really well made games. But I agree, like I'm not into multiplayer at all. So give me a weird ass campaign, or like Doom 2016 is another just really non-standard kind of first person shooter. Like it's its own thing. There's not a whole lot of other games quite like that. That's another one I should replay.
The boomer shooter is coming back.
The boomer shooters are here for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
So Dusk. And Respawn apparently wanted to do Titanfall 3, but it got canceled because they are in the Apex Legends and Star Wars minds forever.
Yeah.
Those Star Wars games are good though. Like no shade at that, but it's just a shame that they wanted apparently to do Titanfall 3 and market forces dictated that they do not do Titanfall 3.
Yeah.
I think that's the right way to phrase it.
Yeah. As much as coming from that side of like the gaming space of like, pretty enjoying, you know, multiplayer shooters kind of like that, like at least casually, Apex is actually like pretty good feeling. It feels like Titanfall. The only difference is it's in a battle royale setting, but
yeah,
the characters are actually cool and stylized and fun. It's not too serious. Of course people will be sweaty in these types of games,
sure,
but to me, what always appealed to Apex, as opposed to something like Overwatch or, you know, even Fortnite or something like that, is the characters and the world setting and everything like that. It still holds up. And like I said, Titanfall is kind of a prequel to Apex. So there's so many references and so many things. And even I think the newest character is a reference to Viper.
Fun.
Yeah, so it's really cool that, you know, the developers, they know that, like, people, like, fans have been clamoring for a Titanfall 3, but they're like, guys, that's not happening.
Yeah.
But we at least acknowledge that this is, if we could, we would too, but there's no way that we're going back to that, because it wouldn't narratively make any sense, and unless it was a prequel, and we're not going to do that. We don't want to go into that space. You guys are better. You guys deserve better than that.
They've got too much integrity to shit on the the storytelling that they've worked tirelessly.
Yeah. Ash and Viper and Blisk and all of
them. Yeah.
God, I love Kane.
Never.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why he doesn't show up is because he's lame. Yeah. So
I know. I'm just razzing.
Yeah.
I bet Apex Legends is good. I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that if a multiplayer like live service game can survive for 5 years, that means it's probably pretty damn good. Like,
yeah.
Many of these games come out and they're mediocre and they get shut off 6 months later. So, you know,
hey, to me, I make a comparison to like a fan favorite, especially of the Steam era, Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves Team Fortress 2. Yeah. So,
I mean, I haven't played that game in probably a decade, but like,
me neither.
I played the shit out of it in college. And yeah, that was my platonic ideal of like, being able to find people who weren't sweaty and just would tolerate me just being the demo man and just being like, look, I don't really care about capture points. I just want to shoot my little sticky bombs and have a good time.
And then you would find this like-minded people. Like, I just want to be a soldier and rocket jump everywhere. I don't care. Yeah.
So, because stairs don't exist in this universe.
Yeah.
That's true.
I blew them up.
What a time.
That's in the lore. What a yeah. world. They rocket jump everywhere. That's how they navigate.
All right. Hell yeah. All right. Well, that was Titanfall 2. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time and going through this game with me. The game is a blast. This podcast has been a blast. Again, I can't thank you guys enough.
Oh, yeah. This was a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun going down memory lane. I might actually boot it up like later on this week mm-hmm. or something. Cause it just reminded me of how much I just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just enjoy being, you know, part of the community and stuff. So
a minor thing is that this game has level select, which means that I can just boot it up and just go straight to the factory level anytime I want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. I'm just going to do that later. I think
Kane's going to miss you.
Oh, God, I love Kane.
Kane who?
That'll be the, Kane who. That is the way to end this episode and this half-hearted discussion of the story of this game. So, once again, thank you guys for coming on. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate everyone who listens. Please, as the music is playing us out in this episode, go down, click around for comics and video games and podcasts from Adam and Corey. Lots of good creative work coming from the two of them. And as always, thank you for listening. Tune in next week for the next game to come out of the backlog.